Welcome back to the programme. Good morning. If you've just joined us, thanks again to John, Kathy and Joseph for their contributions over the last hour. But we are heading into final countdown territory. Do you want to be in with a chance to win one of three great cash prizes? €2,500 this afternoon, €2,500 next Friday morning on Lee's show, and €10,000 on this programme next Friday. We have a total of €15,000 in cash to give away over the next week, effectively. €2,500 this afternoon, €2,500 tomorrow, next Friday morning, and then €10,000 later on next Friday morning. If you want to be in the chance, in with a chance in all three draws, you do really need to buy your tickets now, because lines will be closing in the afternoon. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, and you'll see the Mega Summer Cash Draw banner there. Click into it and you can purchase your tickets. They are a tenner, so please only buy them if you can afford them, and you can have a punt like you might the lotto or the bingo or something along those lines. But if you want to buy multiple tickets, either yourself or with other people, you get a free ticket if you buy five, you get two free tickets if you buy eight. And you can, as I say, go onto our website right now, but you have to get onto it now this morning if you want to be in all three draws. That's the only thing I would say to you. So €2,500 given away this afternoon, €2,500 on the Naughty Alarm Clock next Friday, €10,000 on the 9 till noon show next Friday. If you want to give us a call here at the radio station as well, you can do so 07491 25000, and we shall process your ticket for you online. Or, as quite a number of you do, you prefer to call in and pay in cash. You need to get up to us this morning or early afternoon and buy your tickets, as I say, if you want to be in all three draws. We have the Trombola there with all the lucky tickets so far in it, and your name could be going into that draw drum. You have as much chance as anyone else in winning €2,500 this afternoon, €2,500 on the Naughty Alarm Clock next Friday, €10,000 on this show next Friday as well. And that will be it, the end of Highland Radio's Mega Summer Cash Draw. But as I say, just to reiterate, because I don't want anyone to miss out, if you want to be in all three draws, you need to get on to us right about now. Damien McGowan, Falmore Dunlow, super proud of you today from Granny and Grandad. Well done, Damien. Hi, Greg and team. I'd like to say good luck to Amy McDade in Termon on her leaving results today, from Mum and Dad and all the family in Termon, Cashel, Shanahan and Trenta. Thanks, team. It's our pleasure. Please say congratulations to Susan Eveson in Milford on the birth of her new grandson from Mary. I hope I've got your surname correct, Susan, but you will know you because you have had a baby, and a very proud Mary texting us in there. Eilish Duffy's in Buncrana, and it's her 70th birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Eilish, from Teshi and Sharon, us all here as well, of course. Erity Hegarty's in Glenties, and he's 18 today. Erity, it's a lovely name. Happy 18th birthday to you. Welcome to adulthood, Erity. Lots of love from Mary, Anthony, Mark, Rachel and Esme in Burton Port. I hope you have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. I wonder, did you get results as well today? 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text for any of your calls and comments, or if you want to get involved in the conversation or even send in a request or dedication. We talk often on the program about, you know, the oversight, you know, from Google and Twitter, X, and, you know, they know what we're doing and they're tracking your movements and all this kind of stuff. And I just got an email during the 10 o'clock news from Amazon, an email from Amazon to tell me that the batteries in my remote control for my Fire Stick are going flat. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's great because I'll change them. But I got an email. So my remote control told my Fire Stick. The Fire Stick told Amazon, who owns it, of course. And they somewhere along the lines, a program was triggered that sends me an email to tell me to change the batteries in my remote control. Crazy, isn't it? But that's the kind of world we live in now. This comparison is not equal. Yes, we went to America, Australia and elsewhere, but we were not handed as much as a cup of tea. If I go to any other country today, like America or Australia, I must provide documentation to prove I can keep myself for 6 months or I'm turned down for a visa. Yet here it's open doors. But again, there are still in excess of 50,000 people that entered America. It could be much more, and other countries as well that aren't documented. You know, that is just a fact, because, as I say, we advocated on their behalf for so long here on this program. And I know people that only recently through one means or another, managed to get actual citizenship. There's people from Donegal living in America with children that could be deported at any given time. So there is the comparison. There are lots of us living elsewhere that aren't legal. That being said, yes, we were given opportunities and we took them. And maybe we should be given opportunities for people to take as well. Are asylum seekers allowed to vote in Ireland? I'm not sure what the rules are in terms of asylum seekers. I think if they've been here for a certain period of time, they are, but I'll double check that. Regarding Ukrainians voting in Ireland, as they are only guests in Ireland and not Irish born, the government know they won't get into power next election. This is just temporary imported votes for government to get back in. If Ukrainians are allowed to vote, then I will not be voting. Well, they are allowed to vote. But this presumption that everything's rosy in the garden and that Ukrainians would instantly vote for the Irish government just because... I mean, can you imagine if a load of Irish people went to Australia and were housed in hotels over there to escape something that was going on in this country? Would we just automatically just vote for the government that was in power? I would actually say maybe independents, even opposition parties, might be better organised in polling these people or encouraging them to vote. I don't see at all the given whereby anyone who's come to this country votes for the government parties just because they're here. I don't buy that because I can't see us doing it in another country. A certain amount of them will. I think most won't bother voting at all, but I think a certain amount of them, of course, will vote for government parties. But I'm sure others will have made acquaintance in local communities with other parties as well and might be inclined to vote for them. Does this woman not know anywhere the Irish went? They had to work very hard to survive. We were not met at the airport at any anywhere else and handed out money. These people come into Ireland to bleeding the state dry and we're putting them in hotels, for God's sakes. I think that was the point Cathy was making. We went to and we've spoken to them. This is not an argument about whether refugees should be here or not. I'm not having that argument, but I'm talking about the Irish experience in travelling abroad. I know I went and worked in London. I know what it was like not to be welcome there, to face very unpleasant situations because of where I was from, to have... I don't sound strange because over here I might sound like I've got a different accent, but over there it's very clear where I'm from, being treated differently because of my accent, the name calling, being told to get out, being told that, you know, referencing the IRA and all that type of stuff. There's lots of people listening to this program that went over to Scotland. They weren't made very, very welcome there. It was unpleasant. Yes, they went over and worked, but it wasn't open doors and... You know, and here right now, there are people here that are experiencing the same thing that we experienced elsewhere. That's a fact, okay? But that doesn't... I'm not saying that then that's also a reason to make decision A, B, C, or D. I'm only talking about facts. The facts are that we know all about leaving this country and struggling and being mistreated and prospering despite all of that. But it's all in our history. I've experienced it. I'm not sure who else listening has experienced it. I said it before, we'll keep on saying it until people wake up and see the difference between the Irish diaspora and the modern day immigration. We get nothing free. They get everything free here. Good morning, Greg. We were the people. I'm tired of hearing that we never got a thing for free. We got nothing. We were treated worse. We weren't even thought of as white. Right, okay. Local elections are a farce as the county council has no power anyway, so it doesn't matter who votes. It's only a pretense at democracy in this country. Well, that's why perhaps the turnout for council elections is dwindling all of the time. And that's why if certain independents or opposition parties organise in a certain way, they could end up really quite successful, because some people will be very motivated to vote, and obviously then there's a great deal of apathy. One person actually giving up their democratic right to vote if Ukrainians are allowed to vote. So maybe there will be big changes in the next local elections. Who is to say? Okay, we'll be back with much more in the 9 till noon show, of course, but let's first take a break for the bingo numbers. Thank you for all your calls and comments so far this morning. We will be getting to them, of course. A caller says, Morning, Greg. We left our shores, but we had to work and work hard. We did not get free money, housing, school, doctors, etc. When family members went to Australia, they had to have visas to get into the country and worked hard. Nothing was free when people had to leave their homes in Northern Ireland because of the troubles back in the 70s. They got nothing for free. Another caller says, come on, Greg, let's stop the crap talk on your show and tell the truth for once. Well, everyone's getting their views. I'm reading everyone's views on the programme at the moment. So we're not here to adopt a, not here this show as such, but I mean in our conversation to adopt a position and that's it and stick to it. I mean, we talk, we converse, we explain, we express our views. Some people will stick with their views. Some people will change the views. But we platform all different views and have different conversations, and that's the way we've always been. And is that not the way we should be, rather than, you know, one person who's got one view ends up surrounded by, you know, on your social media, on your Facebook, do you not find now at this point that really, you know, everyone that you interact with thinks the same as you? You must have spotted that at this point. Whether you believe we should be doing this, that, and the other, or any other social media, for an example, how is that healthy? Where is the exchange of views, the conversation? You know, people are blocking and defriending, and you find yourself in this echo chamber where everyone agrees with you, and then there's another group over there, and everyone agrees with them. I don't see any interest in that personally, because, and then what we're doing here is reading people's comments of all different points of view. Right, okay, back to more pressing matters immediately, and that's a conversation with Lynn McDevitt, who's a cancer survivor and campaigner for Better Cancer Services. Lynn, thank you very much for joining us. What's a difficult time for you at the moment? We do appreciate you helping us highlight this issue.
Yes, Greg, and thank you for having me on.
No, it's no problem. What has your experience been over the last couple of days?
Well, I'm just saying about, we were in casualty yesterday for nearly 12 hours. And casualty has got worse instead of better for the doctors, the nurses, the bed manager. Everybody in that hospital is under severe pressure. They're doing the work of five people. And I don't think they're appreciated. And my qualm today is with our councillors, our TD and our minister. Now, I seen this with my own eyes yesterday. Vulnerable people, people in pain, children, pregnant ladies, grannies, grandas, you know, all, everybody sitting, everybody was in pain and vulnerable. The doctors and nurses was doing their very, very best. But sadly, there were, I would say every time I came out, there was another two people added, another two people added to the wee room that we were in, right? And there were no dignity, there were no, what am I trying to say, everybody seen what everybody was
no
getting done.
No privacy at all.
No privacy, sorry, that was my word.
And I think it's very gracious of you to be talking about other people's experiences and recognising that as well. But you were there for a reason. Someone close to you
is
at the moment with cancer. And a cancer patient gets a red card. Okay, now this is a red card that yous haven't really used at all. So explain the red card, what it's meant to do.
Right. Well, if you're on chemotherapy, radiation, any kind of cancer treatment, if you're on it and you're having difficulty with it, you get a red alert card and you phone the number on that card. And that's, they go through a list of questions on the phone and then they'll say, you come in here, you're supposed to get right up to oncology or a ward with us card if you have symptoms, right? Well, it didn't happen yesterday. We went in at 20 past nine and we never got a bed till 10 past eight.
Right, so...
In the evening.
Almost 12 hours. And were you sat actually in the ED itself for the 12 hours? Or Lynn, I'm asking some people... Because I'll tell you what the situation is that people who've never been to the ED... don't really know what's going on there. You have, of course, and you have an understanding. But then what happens is for some reason or other, they have to go there with an elderly relative or a young person that's twisted their ankle or something. And then their eyes are wide open to what the reality is like there. So talk us through the day yesterday, Lynn.
Right. But we went in first at 20 past nine. We phoned first and we were told to be there at 20 past nine that some lady would come down and meet us, right? We went in and we were told we had to go through the A&E. Even we had this, we had phoned, we still had to go through the protocol, which we did. We sat for about an hour and then we couldn't sit no more. We had to get lying flat. So we asked the transit, the nurse, triage nurse, everybody couldn't have been nicer. And we got into the wee room to lie down, you know, with one of the hard beds. But anyway, I wasn't lying on it. I'm just saying, we never seen that nurse till 4 o'clock in the day that was supposed to meet us at 20 wow. past nine. Now, I'm only talking about our own experience. Doctors had came in. Like, I don't envy. What I'm on here today to say is our politicians are taking wages for doing jobs in Donegal that are not getting done. Right. We have a minister in Donegal. There was at least 100 people in that emergency yesterday, all in pain. Some of them are still sitting in pain. We were lucky we got a bed. That poor bed manager, maybe, I don't, not quote me on this, had three beds and maybe 25 people in need. What was she supposed to do? Invent beds. So where's our politicians and TDs? They shouldn't get another penny wages till they sort out our hospital.
And also,
because they're
too,
vulnerable people.
You mentioned it, people going through very difficult situations, pregnant people, a pregnant woman, sorry, a child, people with renal issues, what yous were going through. You're stripped of dignity too, because you're asked questions, everyone can hear
yes.
them. You almost have to
yes.
say, right, you know what? Everything that I, the dignity I try and maintain in general life, you have to, often in these situations, you have to give it up.
Yeah, that's it. You leave your dignity at the door and collect it on the way out. But I'm not, I'm just saying, our nurses and doctors are walking angels, right? And I really mean this, walking, breathing angels. But it's the hospital staff, the wee girl going round to give you the tea or the coffee. It was like a maze, Greg. She was pushing her trolley in and out. The fellas, they're all trying to keep a smile on their face. The management in Letterkenny Hospital couldn't run a bath, right? So it's time the Donegal people got behind each other on this. And got this sorted out once
but
and
they
for
will
all.
Say, what, that, what they'll say though, Lynn, they'll say, and listen, we interviewed the head of CELTA a couple of weeks ago, and I mean, I can't hold him down and force him to give answers, but the same answers is the same answers that, you know, there's a lot of money's been put into the hospital. There are positions available that they can't fill. They're obviously negotiating to get hospitals working on a 24/7 basis, but there's resistance from certain unions, and it's like 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. They'll say that they're struggling to get step down care. They're struggling to get places for people in the community. They're struggling sometimes to get families to accept loved ones' homes because the family are saying, no, that person's too sick to leave the hospital, and on and on and on and on and on it goes. Like, you know,
right.
All those problems, like the people that you think should be sort of hiding from them, they're admitting that those are all the problems. So it's all out there. What do we do to...
Where's the money? We need money and resources and more beds, more nurses and more staff. Because wait, I tell you, a TD comes home at 6 o'clock in the night or 5. He gets expenses. He gets his lunch wherever he is. What does a nurse or doctors get?
Mm-hmm.
They maybe finish at 8 and have another half an hour to change over. They don't get extra money or anything. I'm just saying, nobody in this. We need to sort out Donegal because we're the forgotten county one more time. And I'm really angry in this today because I sat through it yesterday, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Right. DACC thought we took 10,000 people to our street on a wet Sunday and got kept in the breast cancer clinic. So why can we not do this? It's okay, you speaking to a man in a suit. Get that man in a suit down to emergency and see what's going on. Just let him sit there for 3 hours.
Yeah. See, what I don't understand, Lynn, when we have a recruitment issue and we can't get the staff right, why are we putting 65 million odd billion away or billions away as a rainy day fund when it's piddling it down now? Why don't we properly pay our nurses to attract, even if we retained qualified nurses here, we wouldn't have to suck other needy countries dry of their medical professionals. Like, what I don't understand is why are the nurses and doctors, where it's proper that they are, aren't they properly looked after and resourced? Why are we putting money away for a rainy day, as I say, when it's flooding right now? That's what I can't understand.
No, I can't understand it either, but our nurse, we have to get behind the nurses and doctors here. We're not going to have any. The Donegal needs to stand out. We need to get out there and get that hospital sorted. Right. I really mean that, Greg. There's sick, vulnerable people every day up there. I was only up there for a few hours and it's not getting any better. And us talking about, we have people power at the end of the day. But we need people to come out, and the TDs shouldn't get another penny to sort out the problems in Donegal. Between, I'm talking about health today, right across the board, and our nurses should get double wages. They should get what TDs is getting. And I really mean that. Doctors, nurses and hospital staff deserve medals. And they need more resources, more beds. Anybody up there last night, see, just off the top of my head, 20 people waiting on beds. And how many beds? How many still sitting there this morning? And then we had jeers. I swear to God, we had jeers just for you not to go to casualty. Did you try sitting in one of the hard chairs for an hour?
I've done 9 hours, 12 hours in one
yeah,
instance on them.
I'm just saying, it's unreal for wee babies, sick babies, mammies. You can't even leave your baby to go and get a drink of water or anything. You're relying on the staff again to bring you water to your room. The mammies with the wee sick children, the person there on their own, you're going to get pyjamas, slippers if you think they're staying in, and then they get told, oh, I'm sorry, there's no beds, you have to wait another hour. The poor bed manager's going off her head, the nurses are going off her head, and they're all keeping this lovely smile on their face to try and keep you positive. No, not in this day and age. I don't care. See, when the elections come up, don't vote for them. Make them do a thing now in Highland Radio for me and every politician or TD or minister. Our minister should be ashamed of himself to say he's a minister in Donegal when our hospital and our health service isn't the way it is. And there's no way, even if we want a PEP scan, we have to go to Dublin. A Centre of Excellence. Where was our Centre of Excellence last night when about 50 people in emergency needed help?
It's better to have
is
a minister.
Any help
is it not better, though, to have a minister in your area that can, even if it's not successful, make these representations, though, on I don't mean, because I interviewed the Minister for Health not so long ago, and he was going, you know, yeah, we recognise there are challenges, the challenges in all hospitals. We've just invested an extra 30 million in Letterkenny University Hospital. You know the stuff that you hear, Lynn. You've
yes,
been listening
Greg,
to it for a very long time.
If they recognise the challenges should be fixed before they recognise another challenge. Let them all go up and sign off the one handsheet and get one thing sorted. But this is vulnerable people in pain that we are talking about, getting drips in a corridor. Mm-hmm. Wait, I tell you, that day has gone. And poor doctors, neither wonder nobody wants to be a doctor in Donegal. Where's the incentive for them?
I worry about, I mean, firstly, a massive amount of people leave the ED before their treatment is completed. We have those figures now. We know that. So lots of people in that situation yesterday just get up and go. My concern is, as well as everything that you've been talking about, Lynn, is the people then that say, I will not go back. Like, your husband won't, right? But I know there are people who've had that experience. And you know, the next time they're sick, I'm not doing it again. I'd prefer to die. I'd prefer to die in my own bed in my house than sit for 12 hours in the ED. Those conversations are happening in houses all across this county. And people, if you've had those conversations with someone when they've said, I'd prefer to die than sit there for 9, 10, 11, 12 hours, text us 0866 25000, because I know those conversations are happening. But also people leaving before their care is completed, and people even maybe being discharged when they're not ready to be discharged. Like, there's a whole, underneath the ripples that we're talking about, there's a whole different crisis that's costing people's lives and costing years of their lives that we can't put a figure on. But I know it's there because I'm of the area and I speak to people.
But who do we hold accountable for what's going on a daily basis in Letterkenny General Hospital and the doctor's surgeries? Because they're as bad, you phone and you can't get anybody. 2 days later, you might get somebody to ring you back. People in their houses, I'm only talking daily. This is going on across Donegal, rural Donegal. But you think if you came all the way in from Marrote or Donegal Town to Letterkenny Hospital, I'm just saying, and then sat there for 9 hours and maybe have to go way back to get things, you know, run to Dunn's Run. I'm just saying, Greg, somebody has to be accountable for Letterkenny General. And I mean, you go down and sat in it, Greg. Send anybody, get a photographer in. I'm just saying, it has to get better. This can't get any worse. We've been on here so many times telling, but our politicians, TDs, ministers are all getting paid good, honest money. What's our doctors and nurses getting? Peanuts. And it's them that's carrying the can.
Yeah, well, that's why they're quitting or moving or going elsewhere, and that's why we can't hire them. Lynn, you've been heard today.
You.
Thanks. I hope everyone gets well as much as possible soon. Thank you very much, Lynn McDevitt there. 0866 25000. A caller says only people who pay taxes should have a vote. I feel anyone on social welfare benefits should not be entitled to a vote as they contribute nothing to the country. Those on sick benefits is totally different. Again, not to be, we all pay tax. So even if you're on social welfare benefit, and you know, I think it's like about 3 or 4% of the population are unemployed at the moment, which is effective full population, full employment. If they buy milk, they pay tax. If they buy home heating oil, they pay tax. If they buy petrol, they pay tax. If they buy diesel, they pay tax. Everywhere they turn, they pay tax. So are you on about income tax or do you not count the tax that everybody pays on top of income tax? Greg, after the Navy acquired two ex-New Zealand naval ships and then the same department is about to put out to tender for a new MPV ship by the year end, this says a lot about their thinking in the Department of the Defence. Another caller says, good morning, Greg. Ask the panel about the Ukrainian refugees kicking up a stir because they have to now pay for dinner. Where's that happening? Give us the details of that, please. What are these people doing with Irish taxpayers' money other than sending it home, which is illegal? They aren't buying food or paying rent, public travel, free postage back to the Ukraine. The list goes on. So where's the money? We need an audit. So give us more details as to where the stink is being kicked up about it so that we can investigate it a bit more. Hi, Highland. I want to bring to listeners' attention the fact that myself and some colleagues have had trouble with cars that are just out of warranty, all the same make. Has anyone else had similar experiences? Also, the main dealer's telling me it could take months to get a new gearbox part for my 5-year-old car because parts are made in the Ukraine. I'm disgusted, they say. Does the panel have a view on the uterus transplant? I would think if you had any transplant, you'd need to be on a number, if not several medicines. How is that healthy for a baby in the womb? Sometimes experimental biology is good and sometimes it's just a step too far. Who governs the ethics around such operations? This is a womb transplant that took place in England during the week. I'm not really sure in terms of rejection medicines. I'm not sure in terms of rejection medicines what that means, but I presume if someone has a kidney transplant, they're probably on the same medicines and they can go on to have children as well, can they? Pardon my ignorance if they can't or if it's not universal. But I presume we know how these medicines might work with pregnancy. A caller says several European governments have asked their voters in a referendum whether they support the new EU migrant deal on this matter of profound change. Should Ireland also have a referendum? What do you think? Should Ireland have a referendum on the new EU migrant deal? I think one or two are, unless more have announced that they are, and I've missed that. I'd welcome a referendum on immigration. This is primarily what democracy is about, giving the people a say. What would the phrasing of that referendum be? Because it has to be a question. Is it where people are from? Is it their background, their nationality? Is it whether they're vetted or not? Is it whether or not their intent to work or not? I mean, an awful lot of Ukrainians are now working. I don't have the figures. I'll get the figures for you. But an awful lot of them are. So they would tick the taxpaying box. Is that okay? Or is it the fact they're from another country? Or is it to pull the drawbridge up altogether? Or is it only if they're from African countries? Or like, what would the lots and lots of you are texting in or have texted in, and some people it's the same person texting in on different days, are seeking a referendum. What exactly would you want them, would you want the referendum to be worded like? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. Hi Greg, re-employment for our young people. Greetings from Switzerland, where I'm with my son who's settling into a new job here. He's getting double the salary that he was getting in Ireland with much better working conditions. Irish employers need to waken up, stop being so greedy and stop ripping off both employees and their customers. Also, his tax works out at around 12% overall. Another caller says it's an indictment of successive governments in this country, unfortunately, that young people are leaving in their droves and will not be coming back unless to visit family and friends. Another caller said Ireland has been educating people for export for years. I was one of those people, but I came home again with money in my pocket and opened my own business. Most people like me go away, but love to return home. Yeah, and hopefully, and that's it. And who would deny a young person the opportunity to go out and see the world and experience different languages and cultures and food and different climate? Yes, of course. And there will always be that group of people, and I'm not sure what percentage it is. I think we are kind of exclusively talking about not those that want to, but those that feel they've got no future here or that they have to. And that is a new crop of people, I would suggest, because there's more now than there would have been a couple of years ago. Good morning, Greg. What your panel needs to understand and our government is that the Irish men and women don't want to be killed in war. It's that simple. Tell John quit his Russian scaremongering. He never saw or will be on the front line. They want our kids to leave. For everyone that leaves, two illegals come in. I called it from the start. They're here for votes. These illegal non-citizens should and will not have a vote. We Irish need to stand up. But again, what way are they going to vote? That's the one part of that circle I can't square, in that, you know, I really think it's probably as likely that people who are living here, who have moved here, are going to engage with people that are Sinn Féin, Greens, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Independents. I don't think there's living in a hotel room with two kids necessarily means that you're going to go, yay, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. Apparently in Donegal, there's quite a number of Ukrainians that are returning home now. Greg, government running the country down with open borders, says a listener there. If you have a different view to that as well, please text us in, because I do know that, you know, it's, when people are more passionate, they might be more inclined to take the phone out. And I just want to make sure all views are represented as best as is possible. All right, and on they come. Really appreciate your calls coming in. I want to do a bit on the ED first, because with it being Friday, we kind of switch off from the more serious stuff at 11. So I just want to make sure I get through as many votes as as many texts as possible. My partner was in ED, emergency department, a few weeks ago, and was sent home. Sat in an ambulance for 3.5 hours. When she asked for her blood results, she was told her bloods were clear and she wouldn't be getting a scan. A few days later, I got her in bed, barely able to breathe, and sadly, despite the best efforts of the ambulance crew, she passed away. Overcrowding is a serious issue. I'm so sorry for you, for the loss of your partner, and also for the circumstances there. That's a very, very difficult story. My partner was in the ED a few weeks ago, sent home, sat in an ambulance for 3.5 hours. When asked for her blood, she was told her bloods were clear and she wouldn't be getting a scan. A few days later, in bed, barely able to breathe, and ambulance crews tried to resuscitate her, but she passed away. I'm really grateful for you texting in at what must be a very difficult time for you, because I really do also want to get a sense of the consequences of everything that's going on. You know, when people are just leave because they can't take anymore, or when you can't get them to go into the hospital, they say, no, I'm not going into the hospital. I'm not doing that. And what the outcomes of that might be. Because as I think that's the great untold ramifications of the situation that we have. Yes, people have long waits, and then they get a bed, and then they get treatment, and hopefully they get better, and then they get out, and it's a horrible experience that they don't want to repeat. But there are going to be people that leave the ED, and they do in their great numbers. What happens to them, like that person who didn't get a scan, who's very sadly passed away? I just want people to have an opportunity to tell their stories in that regard as well. You can call Caroline 074-91-25000 or WhatsApp or text 086-6025000. A caller says, Lynn has every right to complain, but the politicians in this country don't care. It's all about self-interest. We all know who will win the next local election. My wife is currently in hospital and our life has been saved because we paid for private care. This country's shocking. Let me see. To anyone who doesn't vote, stop crying when the results are the ones you don't want. Yeah, well, that's really important too, that you do. Right, okay, stay with me. We are going to be talking about the amount of vacant property around the country, the county, and encouragement to get involved with the vacant property refurbishment grant. Okay, Councillor Patrick McGowan, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so okay, we're talking about the vacant property refurbishment grant. You're encouraging people to, if it suits them, to apply for this grant?
Yeah, absolutely. But more than that, I have been speaking to the council. I think we need to be doing a lot more to publicise it. And I would actually say we should identify the property and actually write to them or call once we get the folio numbers, we can find out who owns them. We should actually encourage them, because at the moment there's approximately 300 applications in Lifford. There's about 100 been forwarded now, have been accepted. The rest have been worked on. The team isn't long in place. But to consider there's only 300, I would have thought there was 3,000. It's just unbelievable. Like there's not an MD or anything that wouldn't be 300. And if you look at all these...
Just in relation to that, what fund are they drawing down from?
Yeah, this is the vacant property and refurbishment grant. It's either 50,000 or 70,000. Now, that's been improved since it was introduced. Last year, it was 30,000, 50,000. It's now 50,000, 70,000. It's a fairly straightforward grant. If it's a house that's been lying empty in the countryside or a town for more than 2 years, you can get the 50,000 to do it up. Or if there's a fault, say, with the roof or a wall that's dangerous, you can get the 70,000. And the good thing, the new thing that was brought in earlier this year was it can be owner occupied or you can do it up and lease it. Now, by owner occupied means me or you could go out in the morning and buy one of these derelict houses and we can apply for it.
Okay, in relation to the funding of this, I saw recently your party colleague, Minister McConlogue, welcoming €4 million allocated to tackle vacancy and dereliction in Donegal. Is that part of the vacant property refurbishment grant or is that a different funding stream?
I just couldn't be sure. I know this grant is ongoing. There's no date yet for stopping or not, so I'm just not sure which.
But that being said, you talk about how many people are taking up this. There are inroads being made, though. I mean, if you look at this census compared to the last census, there are 18% less derelict properties now than there were 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I've actually noticed quite a few properties that have been done up recently in different areas. Obviously, at the moment of the big housing shortage, people are going along the coast, people like Gatwick, particularly during COVID, everything's been bought up. I know myself, you see properties going up now, it might be up 2 or 3 weeks and they've been sold, and that's not just derelict properties. There is a big demand on property. We need more houses. But the other aspect of this, imagine living in a housing scheme or living in a countryside beside a derelict house that's completely overgrown, maybe rat-infested and everything. It's a blight on the countryside. It's a blight in our town. And, you know, we often talk about the carrot and the stick and big brother and government. Here, probably one of the best grants that has ever been brought out at up to 70,000. Like, it's, you know, it's a no-brainer. If you look at the cost now of getting a greenfield site, putting in roads, doing the landscape, bringing in water and sewage, could cost you anything from 5, 10, 20, 100,000 with Irish Water at the moment. Getting all you can get into one of these houses, get this granted up. Remember, you have the entrance. Look, there may be issues about planning, but these are things that can be sorted out. Them houses are already there. It really is a 1-1. It's a no-brainer.
And the house has to have been built since 2007.
Sorry?
The house that you would be doing up, it says you must have proof that the property has been vacant for at least 2 years and that it was built up to and including 2007. So is that before 2007?
Before. So, it's these old derelict buildings and that have been lying there for many. Look, we see street after street. You see, there's not a road in the county that doesn't have several on. Some of them are not that old, but some of them are old for years. Some of the best sites that you could get are actually being taken up by these properties. And it is a 1-1. Now, there's also the thing that look, you can buy the property, you can sell, or you can't sell it. Whoever gets a grant has to hold on to it, but you can lease it. You can transfer to a family name, or the person that buys it can actually take it up. There's so many positives. There is one issue which has been raised with me several times, and I'm sure with others, is that you have to put up the money at the start. That has always been a drawback coming with grants. Like, you're going to have to spend the money. Now, the other good thing is you don't have to spend the entire 70,000 on that part of the house. Say, obviously, a lot of these old houses, bungalows, cottages, you'll be building on extensions. He can use some of that money for the extension as well. Mm. Like, it really is a no-brainer. So I've asked the council to be more proactive.
Exactly. And you've talked about the level of applications. So how many applications have gone in total, do we know? 300, did you mention?
There's 300.
Like, how many of those have been successful? How many have been green-lit by the council, I wonder?
Yeah, 100. There's out of the 300 there now at the moment, and I just checked my facts there, there's 100 now been approved. The other 200 are at various stages. There are probably more questions been asked. Maybe dependent, because you do need to get an architect. If you're going to start adding on, you can build to the back of a house without plan permission, but you cannot build to the side or the front. That's very strict. But look, it's best to get, if you're going to be renovating anything, you need to get a professional plan and do it right. And you have the whole mature waters there and everything else. Well, by the way, as well, in addition to the 50 or 70,000, you can actually apply for the SEAA grant. Now, I know they're slow on that, but that is another addition. I don't know how long this grant's going to last. This type of grant, you know, you could just see it going again. And that's why I would encourage as many people to get to apply for it.
Yeah, the reason I asked about your figures, because if we want to take it seriously, the Department of Housing needs to be taking it seriously. So there were recently, it was publicised that there were 2,868 applications nationally to this. Of that, 1,000 applicants were approved.
Yeah.
And on top of that, four grants have been made under the €50,000, almost €70,000 property scheme. So the figures don't add up to me, because if four have been approved, drawn down nationally, 1,000. So you're saying 10% of successful applications for this scheme have been in Donegal?
No, but remember, you'd have to say now drawn down. Approved is one thing.
1,000 approved nationally. 1,000 have been approved nationally.
Yeah, I'm saying that there was 300 applications to Donegal County Council, and 100 of them has been processed. How many of them has actually started, I would have no idea. So, look, and the other thing is, remember, Greg, this is only a new grant. Our staff now has only been put in place, the engineers have only put in place about 2 months.
I have less than a minute, but I just want to ask you, have you any concerns, though, that this is a rich man's game? Because it's very difficult. Well, it's very difficult to mortgage on one of these properties on the hope of receiving a grant. If you're a cash buyer or well resourced, yeah, you can. But I mean, can a couple who both 30 years of age get a mortgage on one of those derelict properties, and the mortgage company will consider the €70,000, €50,000 grant in that process?
Yeah, but look, you know, there's always a reason to do nothing. We could all just sit back, and we have you and your show, and everybody's talking about derelict buildings and the blight and towns. And here is a solution. It's not a big stick, because remember, on your show as well, people have talked about that the government should be putting charges. And we're supposed to have a derelict officer going round houses telling people they're derelict and putting charges or whatever. There's talk about putting charges. Here, the government going the opposite way.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not the solution for everybody. But look, if you own the property and you don't have the money or having the wherewithal to do it, sell it to somebody that can.
Okay.
As long as it's going through the legal process, you don't actually, as long as it's through the legal process, council will accept that.
All right, okay. Listen, that's why we invite you on to help promote these things, to put across the government side of things. And
I want the council to be more proactive themselves.
For sure. And an awful lot of people listening to you, by the way, just on that point, will go, yeah, he's right, and yeah, that's right too. That's when we can have conversations like this, we get all sides of the conversation. And I'm sure some people will be encouraged to apply off the back of this convo. Thanks very much.
If they need help, contact me or anybody else.
Yeah, no problem, of course, Patrick. Take care of yourself.